On May 14th, I'll be hosting a free support event in honor of Mother's Day. In partnership with Prove and with doulas on my team, we are hosting this space, and it's going to be similar to the spaces that we hold for our support groups, but most importantly, it's a safe space for bereaved mothers to come and seek support, validation, and community. You can register and learn more about this event, again, it's free, by clicking the link in today's episode notes. We also have new support groups starting in May, from first-time loss, recurrent loss, secondary loss, infant loss, and more. View these groups by visiting themiscarriagedoula.co or by clicking the link in the show description. Some of our groups are available to register for, while others have wait lists. You can check out all of the information for these groups and our free event at themiscarriagedoula.co. Now, let's get into this episode. You're listening to Miscarriage Stories with Arden Cartrett. Senya, thank you so much for being here and for being willing to share your story. Just like I start my other calls with people, I just really want to welcome you to the show and invite you to start your story wherever you feel like it begins. For some people, that's with meeting their partner. For some, it's the first time they knew they wanted to be a mom. And for some, it's finding out they were pregnant for the first time. So I'll let you take it away.
Thank you, Arden. Thank you for having me. I just wanted to say that you're not really on the Instagram, or, you know, I found this podcast randomly through searching on Spotify for stories and things that could help me get through this. And it was, you know, solely by chance. And I'm really thankful for it to be there. And that's something that really helped me to get through the last few weeks. So that's been fantastic. So, and then after listening sort of all these personal stories, I really felt the urge to give back to the community and share mine. So thank you again for having me. So I'll start with my first pregnancy. It was about 4 years ago, and it was wonderful. So I feel very lucky that it went really well, and this is something I will cherish forever, that I was so carefree. I had no worries whatsoever. I did things I would not dream to do now if I ever get pregnant again. So, you know, for example, I would, you know, I said in my email, I think one of the early scans we had, I took a suitcase with my partner to go for a weekend getaway to Portugal. To the scan room, and it was just standing there. We just had that done, and then we just flew off. Knowing what I know now, what could happen in the scan room, I wouldn't do that again. But that was the kind of mindset I had. Wonderful. I would fly for work to different places, you know, very early on. I just didn't know. So blissful ignorance, I guess. Even, you know, quite sort of later in my pregnancy, there was one scan where the doctor wanted to check my placenta. He wasn't quite sure, you know, they did a transvaginal scan. And I was like, sure, do what you need to do. So just not a flicker of, you know, yeah. So, and it was absolutely fine. And I had a pretty standard delivery, no issues at all. And and in the UK, I'm based in London. So, you know, here they send you back quite soon after if there's no issues. So, you know, I had her delivered in the morning, and then in the evening we were back at home already. And then the next day there's, you know, midwife visit. And then a few days after there's another visit from I don't know, like a family worker where they check the conditions, make sure that, you know, there's no issues in the family. And interestingly, she came in and she said, well, are you planning to get pregnant again soon? And I said, well, no, not this second. And she said, well, you make sure you use contraception. So I haven't thought about it yet, because I said, well, okay, I will. And said, well, make sure you do, because if you don't want to get pregnant now, you know, make sure you do. So I said, well, okay, I have to really think about this, you know, sort this out. So I booked an appointment with the doctor, and because I didn't want to get on the pill, I asked about the IUD. I've never had this before, and you know, three months after delivery, I had that put in. And one of the side effects of that is, you know, the perforation of the uterus, 1 in 1,000, so a very rare condition. But they didn't tell me at the time that when it does happen, it happens to postnatal women, because that's when your uterus's walls are very soft, and that's when it can sort of travel out to other places. So unfortunately, I had that, you know, just a few months after I had it in. So yeah, just another thing to sort out. So and then the pandemic kicked in, so I couldn't have the operation for a while, and in the end I had the laparoscopy done abroad, privately. So I had it out, so as soon as, before it kind of damaged anything else inside my body. So it was just lodged in my abdomen, luckily all intact. So it was lucky that I could get it out. So it's something I wanted to put in there, so because people don't really think about it, so as a postnatal thing to be aware of, that I didn't know, wouldn't do that again. So fast forward, four years, we decided to go for number two. We didn't want to have a big gap in the age. And so I got pregnant really quickly. Getting pregnant is not an issue for us. Just on a sort of first, second cycle, if you know when you're ovulating on a very regular. So lucky there. So got pregnant quickly. And again, with the same blissful ignorance, I was sort of breezing through my early weeks. I you know, planned it really well. So I took a 6-month contract for my job. So I thought I'd do that, and then I finish it. Then I go on maternity, making sure I get my maternity pay, and it's all kind of planned and it works out really well. So, and I didn't tell them I was pregnant, because I thought, you know, it's only 6 months. They didn't need to know. And I went for my first scan at about 11 weeks, so like a standard, you know, didn't have any checks before, or just taking vitamins, you know, nothing else really. And I had some supporting just sort of a week before, very, very light. So I thought, you know, I Googled, it said, you know, very common. So I thought, you know, I have another week to go, so I might as well just wait and see what happens. So, and then I went to the hospital for my first scan. I only, you know, 15 minute ride on the bike. So I, you know, literally in my lunch break, as you do, I just on my own, I thought, you know, get a quick tick, get the scan done, go back home and continue working. So didn't really take anything with me. Didn't even have lunch. So I cycled in for my appointment, just, you know, thought nothing of it. And when I had my scan, she said she couldn't see the embryo, and I was, you know, shocked. I just kept asking things like, what do you mean? What do you mean there is no embryo? Does it mean I'm not pregnant? Like, what does it mean? How do I get it out? All of those questions. And she just said, I just need to have a second opinion. So she asked someone else to come in. So they and then they concluded that it was only, you know, 5 weeks old. So it was quite a long time in there, which was a very horrible thing to think about, having, like, you were carrying your baby for quite a long time without knowing. And thinking back, my symptoms did stop, and I again didn't think much of it. So I think, because I was quite sick in the beginning, and I was just sort of quite miserable. And then suddenly it stopped, I think around 7 weeks. But again, because you don't really think about it, and it was just sort of, miscarriage never really entered my mindset before then. I just carried on, and I was just, great, it stopped. I can just sort of feel a bit normal now. So because I didn't actually have any sickness symptoms with my first child, so that was quite a normal thing for me not to have anything at all. So apart from being very tired, so I again didn't really think about it. So by that point, the realization of what was happening hit me. They printed out this piece of paper to say that, you know, I had miscarriage, and said, well, you are in the maternity ward, so you need to, because it's a massive hospital, you need to get to the early pregnancy unit, and this is where they can kind of talk about treatments and everything else. And she just said, well, go a bit left, right, upstairs, lift, and that nothing was going in, because I was just sort of, you know, just dealing with the news. So I just sort of wandered off. And at some point I found myself standing in the corridor, just weeping and not knowing where to go. And then in the end, I sort of took myself to the gynecology department, which was the wrong place. But by that point I was completely in tears by myself. And the receptionist, you know, took pity on me and then walked me to the other side of the hospital where I needed to be, which I'm quite grateful for, because I would not have found it, I don't think. So I get there, and they sit down, and I give them the piece of paper and just say, well, I don't know what I need to do. So I sat there for quite a while until I got seen, and then I kind of, hit me that my lunch break was over for my work. So I just sort of frantically opened my laptop and start answering emails, sort of, you know, in this panic, like I've got to be at work. And you know, it's been a while since, you know, until they kind of got to me, and I was sort of on my laptop and kind of just crying and answering emails at the same time. And and then once they saw me, they put me in a different room, which was quite nice, so I could just get away from other people, because that department had, you know, people were just coming in with other things for early pregnancy, so it wasn't just sort of people dealing with the miscarriage. So I sat in that room for I don't know how long. It was a long time, but for me it was, the time has stopped. So, you know, you just sort of sit there and then eventually, the consultant came in, and she was lovely. She was just so nice and sensitive, and she talked through the options. We talked about the fact that I had the, you know, uterine perforation and how that's going to affect my treatment. And because the baby was there for a very long time, I thought that it's best for me to just get it out as soon as possible. And they gave me the leaflets to read, you know, the different options I could do. And I went for the manual vacuum aspiration, which is, I don't know the difference to D&C. I think it's just a bit quicker.
It would be like a D&E here. Okay. Sometimes it's just a different instrument used instead of a curettage.
Yeah, so they just basically suck it out, but that one is without general anesthetic, so you just do it, they give you, you know, just painkillers and then local anesthetic to the cervix, and then just take it out. So the actual procedure is just 10 minutes long. It's very quick. It's more the preparation for it than they take the bloods and everything else. So that was, bearable. It was unpleasant, obviously, and horrible, but, just listening to some of the horror stories on this podcast and how it could go, I thought that was actually, okay. At the time they had this research going on, which was quite interesting. So they offered me to try the VR headset during the procedure. So they were researching how to help women reduce the risk of anxiety and pain during the procedure. So they had this VR set where they were showing these amazing 3D images of nature and, waterfalls and forests and jungles. And it was lovely. I'm not sure how helpful it was necessarily, but it takes your mind off it, which is nice. And at that point I just said, whatever you can give me, I'll take it. If you think it's gonna help, and it was interesting. So it's nice that doing some interesting stuff to kind of help people through that. So I had that done. Luckily by that point, my phone batteries ran out by that point because I didn't bring anything with me. Obviously I was starving because I didn't have any lunch, and it was hours until, so I managed to get in touch with my partner. And luckily he was, able to kind of see me before he had to pick up a toddler and, sort everything kind of on the house stuff. So that was done. After the year after, we decided that we were ready to try again. This time I took a bit more time to prepare. This kind of world has never, I've never, so this opened up a whole new world for me, the world of, issues and infertility and miscarriages, and kind of that world didn't exist before for me. So I started to do more research on, and that just kind of blew my mind how the whole community is out there, because you don't really, before that's something you didn't think about. And nobody really talks about it either. So when I started talking about my miscarriage, with friends and family, and people were like, yeah, I had a miscarriage. I had a miscarriage. I found out my grandma had a miscarriage. She had twins, apparently, which I didn't know about. I don't really know the details, but I don't know what happened. It's just very common, although it's not making it easier. Something that people don't really talk about. So this time I went to some blood work. So I have some clotting issues in my mom's side of the family. So I went to see the doctor, and he prescribed me some blood thinners for my next pregnancy, which I had took with me. And I also had progesterone prescribed. So I kind of hope that, I get it all covered. When I did get pregnant again very quickly, it was a different pregnancy. So my mindset was very different. I was already quite worried. Every kind of cramp, every sort of sensation that just felt a bit weird, that was always sort of just got me thinking and Googling, finding out if there's anything that could be wrong. So I went when I was sort of about 6 weeks. I went abroad to see my family. And when I was there, I, you know, went to get some tests. So I thought might as well just make sure that everything, because, you know, I didn't get, I wouldn't get a scan here until, you know, probably about sort of 11, 12 weeks. I thought I'd get something privately. So I went to do some blood work and a scan. I think it was around 6 weeks. And by that point, she saw the sac, the yolk, but no embryo. And she said, that's fine. You know, it could be there, you know, in the next few days. So, you know, don't worry, let's do your HCG and you know, a couple of days and see what happens. So I've done that. And then the results came back, and the HCG, as I kind of knew, had to go up quite a lot, and it went very minimal amount up. So I knew that I was already preparing myself for bad news. At the time, I already kind of had a bit of a cry, and, you know, already told my partner that, you know, it's not looking good. So I'm, you know, worried about my next scan. So when I came for my next scan, which was a week after, around 6-7 weeks, she, the doctor sort of had a look, and she took ages, and she just said, oh, I can't see, let me get my colleague, another doctor. So, and by that point I was already kind of weeping. And another doctor came in, and she had a look, and she's like, oh, it's there, look, it's there. I was like, oh, okay, is it? And then they saw an embryo, and they saw a heartbeat. So by that point, I weep with joy. It's just a roller coaster of emotions. So she said, look, you know, it's there. So just stop worrying, you know, let's just, you know, continue the blood work, come back, you know, later, you know, a few weeks time, and then we'll have a look. Or not even come back, you know, it looks fine, you know, just keep doing the blood work. So I went back home, and it's just like, yes, it looks looking okay. We're fine. We're just going to carry on. And then it was a couple of weeks with my family. And then on the last day before leaving back to London, I thought I'll just get another scan. I'm just, you know, for my peace of mind, I'll just do that. And I went, it was the day before flying out. So I went, luckily for me, I took my mom with me, because my sister was saying, oh, you know, just take a taxi, you know, don't fuss. And no, I want my mom to drive me there. And she did, which was very, very nice. I went there, and at that point they couldn't find the heartbeat. It was just the up and down of it. I was exhausted by this point, because I was worrying, and then I wasn't worrying, and I was worrying again. And it was just, yeah, it was very hard. And I think this loss has really hit me hard, much harder than the first one. I just made me so, so sad. So sad. And I just, I had that scan, and I didn't even leave the room for a while, and I just sat there with my, you know, hands, my head in my hands, and there was a lady there, not a doctor, what position she held, and she just said, oh, don't worry, it's okay, don't cry, you know, some women come in here, and they see that, you know, their babies died much, much later stage, and that's really not helpful, you know. That's somehow devaluing my grief and my loss, and, you know, it's just like, you know, at least you're not that far along, basically. And it's just like, well, I'm here now, and you know. Anyway, so I, that was that was a very strange, I mean, she was trying to be helpful, I think. But anyway, so I left the scan room, and then I still could not, because my mom was waiting for me outside. I still couldn't face it. So I sat in the corridor for another 10 minutes, just trying to kind of compose myself. And then I knew as soon as I'd see my mom, I'd just be in a pool of tears. And because my toddler was there, and so it was, yeah. And she's, you know, that age, she's 4, and they're so sensitive to parents being upset, and they really see it. And we talk with her about emotions a lot, you know, being able to verbalize emotions. So she's very tuned to kind of how people feel. So when I came out, I just was a mess. And she just came and gave me a hug and just said, "Why are you so sad? What's wrong?" And yeah, it was just, yeah, very, very sad moment. And then we drove back, and yeah, I think my family, my side of the family, doesn't talk emotions a lot. They don't really like expressing talking through emotions. So I felt like they didn't let me really express it. Well, it's not like they didn't let me. They just kind of, I kept saying, you know, don't cry. Don't, you know, kind of help, kind of trying to help me, but then not helping me, because all I wanted to do is just cry. I wanted to be upset. I wanted to have these emotions, and they just didn't give me the space to do it. So I spent a lot of my time, and not because they didn't, they were trying to help me, but didn't know how, I think. And I spent a lot of time just on my own, just crying my eyes out by myself, because that's the only place where I could just do it freely and openly as I needed to. And I had to obviously fly to London the next day, and I was worried that I would start miscarrying on the way, you know, and I didn't want that. And we had a layover overnight stay as well, and it's just, oh, I just didn't face it. So I kept the progesterone just to kind of make sure that I didn't start. And then as I went back the next day, the way it works in the UK, you can't just rock up to the to the early pregnancy unit. You had to get referred. So I had to get a doctor's appointment to get referred. And by the time I got referred, it was about a week since I found out about my miscarriage. So so that was a very weird sensation again, just sort of waiting for it to have kind of for them to take it out, but not wanting for it to be out as soon as possible. And when I went there, so I was ready to kind of take it out again. I did think about doing a medical option this time, and it was lucky I had a week to digest as well, I think, because I might have gone for that if I went straight away. But then I had that week to kind of listen to podcasts and read stuff around it, and because the leaflets they gave me, you know, the first time around, they don't talk about laboring at all. They talk about, you know, take painkillers. Okay, you know, I have a fairly high threshold for pain. Like, take painkillers, you know, I'd be fine. But sort of reading about how it could be, you know, you could be in labor, and, you know, having done labor for 2 days and three nights before. I definitely didn't want to do that, especially if you don't get a baby at the end of it. It just feels so something that I didn't want to put myself through unless I really had to. So I went for the MVA again, because I knew what it was. I knew that, you know, it was, you know, I could take it. And when I was there, because all of the documents I had before from abroad were in different language, I had to have another scan so they can prove that I had it there. And then she said, well, it's only me on duty, so we need two people to confirm that you've got. No. It's like, can you come back tomorrow? And I think like the expression she saw on my face, because I already carried it for a week. I took a day off work. I was ready to have this done now. I didn't want to go. So she said, okay, well, let me make some calls. Let me see if we can find another doctor on another floor to have a look, and we can get this done. So luckily, they did find someone to come down from another, I don't know, department before, I don't know. And she was lovely. Again, I've been very lucky with the staff that treated me. And she had a look and said, yes, you know, we can get this done. We can get this done today if you want it. And that's exactly what I needed to hear. And yeah, I just stayed there as they prepped me, and then I had it done within the next few hours, which is just, you know, the best thing in that impossible situation. So and then I asked my partner to pick me up when I was done. And since then, so it's been 3 weeks. Since then, I just been, as I said, very, very sad this time. Your podcast has really been so helpful. I just listening to people's stories and of people talking about their experience and their take on things has been really helpful to me. So yeah.
That's it. Thank you so much. And now you're a part, you know, you've mentioned that the podcast was really helpful for you, and now you're a part of that for somebody else, especially only weeks after your recent loss. You mentioned that the second loss hit you harder than your first. And that's something I know I relate to, and I've never really been able to understand it, but my second loss definitely hit me harder. It felt heavier. It felt like I struggled to cope with it, compared to my first. And so I really related to that. I think that sometimes we, you know, experiencing a loss is definitely a shock, but after you've done it before, now you're like, well, if this happens again, I know what this looks like, so I'll be able to handle it next time. And then it happens again, and you're like, whoa, this has knocked me down even further. And I thought that I wouldn't be knocked down anymore, if that makes sense. It can be really complicated.
Yeah. And where do you take it from there as well? Because I'm very keen. We're very keen to try again. And I'm just thinking my next pregnancy, I don't, how do I cope with that? How do I, you know, keep calm? You know, I was Googling like Dopplers the other day. It's like, is that a thing? Do people just, is there a market for kind of mums who just can't, you know, just keep, you know, I think that, you know, just the idea of, you know, going through it again is just very frightening to me. That I just, you know, I don't know. It's very hard. And I think, yeah, it would be even more devastating, really, because I know what's coming. And I know what could go wrong that I didn't before. And even sort of scan scans are having, you know, going to the scan room is now has very different meaning to me than it did before. So everything has a very different, everything has changed. I have changed now. Mm. And then, yeah, it's, I'm very worried to try again. I'd like to, and I think we will, but I don't know what kind of pregnant woman I'm going to be with all this knowledge and all the worrying and I don't know.
Well, I mean, I can tell you, even as a bereavement doula, I am a wreck whenever I've been pregnant after loss, and it's equal to living child. I don't handle it very well, but I think that we find things that help us feel more comfortable and feel safer in the moment, and it kind of ebbs and flows. I like to say that people survive pregnancy, because that's very much what it feels like, especially after loss, is it feels like we are surviving this thing that is so scary that we've now only thought of loss with. And it's so interesting to have, you know, a living child and then go through loss. I know you mentioned that you were so naive in that first pregnancy of yours. Do you feel like it was all the more shocking because you did have a pregnancy that was pretty textbook and it ended with a Absolutely. Living child, where you're just like, I'm untouched by miscarriage because I have a child right here in front of me. You know, we kind of have that misconception sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just feel so much more grateful for her than I, you know, and appreciating her so much more now, knowing that it is difficult, because before, mm-hmm. you know, it was a breeze. And I didn't know that you could after having such an easy pregnancy and birth, that you could just not have eventually, and that you could have issues. And you know, some people don't sometimes, and that just completely just was a big surprise to me, for sure.
Yeah, I can understand that. It also makes life seem more valuable and fragile, where you're sure you look at your child and you're just like, it's kind of crazy that you exist, because it's really hard to get here. And I kind of think that, looking at humans in general, I'm like, wow, a lot of things had to go right for you to be here. And, you know, sometimes you look at people who are wasting that and you're like, this is so hard to get, it's hard to live. And that's really complicated. I think it kind of creates that whole like fear of death, but then you also are looking around at how just crazy it is to be here, if that makes sense. It's one of those things of like, whenever you think about what happens when we die and your like mind goes into that deep, dark hole of like trying to figure it out. That's what I feel like pregnancy is for me after loss.
Yeah. And the idea of bringing child into the world is a miracle. If you think about what things need to go right from the very beginning to the very end, that, you know, it's amazing that, you know, it comes your way, and you're so lucky to have that. Absolutely. Yeah, it's amazing. As I said, you know, this whole new world has opened to me that I didn't know before, and I'm learning so much more about it, and about these, you know, amazing women that try, you know, for many years and persevere, and they're so brave and they're so amazing. And I only had a very small part of it, I guess, because I, you know, sort of dipping my toe into it, I guess, you know, if you think in the grand scheme of things and what people, you know, go through, going through all these, you know, years of experience and trying and failing and trying again. And it's amazing what they do. So, yeah.
But it's also important to mention that what you're going through is also very hard, and we we shouldn't compare that people have it, you know, harder in other places. But I know that that person, you said it was almost like they were saying that. And I think that as people who are not maybe haven't experienced loss, we hear that from them a lot of like, be grateful for the living child you have, or be grateful that you lost the baby early and not at 30 weeks. And it's like, of course, you would rather have a loss earlier than later, but you would rather not have a loss at all, you know, if you're going to talk about the things you would rather not have. And so it's important to remember that just because people seemingly have it worse, it doesn't make what you're going through any less difficult, any less sad. I like to say that we shouldn't be sad over the things that people might have worse. Sorry, my dogs are barking. That's not good podcasting. But you know, people out there have it so much better. There are people who are filthy rich and have these lavish lives, but we can still be really happy about the things that we do have in our life, right? And so it's kind of going both ways, but sometimes we don't think about it like that. So I just want to validate that what you're going through is so hard and worthy of all the grief and attention.
Yeah, I mean, loss is a loss, and yeah, it's
absolutely,
it is hard. Yeah, and I think I'm still a long way until I feel normal again, if I ever will. I don't know if I ever will. But yeah, it's a long process, I think. Talking about it really helps, I think, as well. So I'm trying to talk about it more in general. And, you know, it does make people uncomfortable sometimes. We don't really talk about it as a society, don't talk about it enough, I think. But it's so important to process it and just keep talking about it. And as I said, it's amazing how, once you start talking about it, how many people open up about it as well. And you realize that, you know, your friends have gone through it. I didn't know about. Your relatives have gone through it. You didn't know about. And it's just, yeah, it is just there. And we need to, you know, for women as well as men, I think it's important to share those experiences and heal each other that way. So
agreed.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on and sharing, and I hope that your journey is not much longer, and I hope that you have only wonderful updates from here. I always like to tell people that we love updates around here. So whenever you're ready to come back and share any update, you are more than welcome. I know that people really love to hear how people are doing.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't know, more testing maybe. I don't know where to go from here now. Positive mindset and more testing perhaps. But yeah, I'll let you know. We'll